Welcome inside the classroom. It's time for your weekly smart look at sports. I'm Jeff Brault alongside Dr. Keith Strudler, runs the aforementioned Marist College Center for Sports Communication. We've got Mike Wallace and Matt, who has a last name that needs to buy a vowel. We're not even going to try to pronounce it.
I learned how to do it.
Yeah, okay, hit me.
Ready? Djokovic.
There you go.
Wow.
No, you stressed the wrong. You had the wrong syllable stress.
No, that's
okay.
Perfect.
Go. You do it.
No, I'm not going to do it.
No, because I'm wrong, and Matt's wrong too.
I'm
so please say it.
Look, I'm nervous about.
How do I do it, Strudler?
The immigration laws.
Yeah. How does Matt say his
gentlemen,
own name?
Let's not fight this early in the morning. Let's not fight now.
Is it possible for my headphones to be louder?
Fun game for the listeners.
I need less.
Fun game for the listeners.
My headphones.
Let's guess. What letter the last name Djokovic starts
with? Everyone knows this.
Let's guess.
What do you mean everybody knows
and
this?
And tweet at us at ESPN_classroom.
All right, yeah.
The winner might get a prize.
Djokovic. Now I'm saying it like I'm on Extra and Bridge of Spies. Djokovic. Mr. Djokovic.
Matt Djokovic is a character in the Christopher Steele movie.
Mr. Djokovic, we know you saw the exchange.
So that's the four of us.
We could do these the hard way, or we could do it the Russian way.
That's the way we're going to be doing just about everything here in the near future. Keith Strudler and I, ostensibly professionals, Mike and Matt, students here at Marist College. It used to be that this morning's program, The Classroom, was produced by Marist students. They used to have a big hand in
preparing
everything for broadcast.
What do you mean used to
audio
be?
Elements,
it's about to
show
take a,
topics.
About to take a surly turn.
In-depth information to separate us from the masses. And then all that stopped. We're just mailing it in. We're mailing it in, Mike Wallace. You were the captain. What happened?
I am the captain.
What happened? Why? Where'd the effort go?
We're fine. Fine. You win. We're waiting for all the new interns to meet.
On February 6th, by the way, James Brown is going to be speaking at the Marist College Center for Sports Communication Speaker Series event.
The Godfather of Soul?
Yes. Well, that would be, like I've said, if I could produce that, I'm doing something. But so he's coming here, right? He's coming here to talk, and that's great. And I'm going to be interviewing him and his good friend Alvin Patrick, who got a little mention on CBS News this morning, little push there. And so he's coming here on February 6th, the Nelly Galletti Theater in the Student Center. It's a big building with a rotunda around it, 5 o'clock, open to the public, Monday night, February 6th. But what I'm taught, why I bring this up is there's an ad that we have rolling like on Facebook, and when it rolls on the mobile device, the picture of James Brown, all you can see is his mustache and his mouth.
That's his trademark.
Yeah, that's all you need.
I guarantee people look at that and they're like, yeah, James Brown, that's him.
He does. He's got a well. Should one of my questions be like, who does your mustache? Because it's like an NFL field. Like
He's a polished man.
Yeah, that's like a green at Augusta, right? I mean, he is. That's what our question, because one of the important questions for that evening is, what am I going to wear?
Ask James Brown what his mustache runs on the stimp. It won't mean anything to you because you don't play golf or know anything about sports. But to someone who plays golf, you would have an they would
is
find
that. Is that like the speed of the green?
That's like what they use to measure the speed of the green, yeah.
It's a good first question.
Now, since no one cares what you're going to wear, let's tell people what's coming up on the program this morning, shall we? The program that Mike Wallace had absolutely nothing to do with producing.
Well, can you?
Unless you don't like it, in which case it's all his fault.
Did we get up? You can also, by the way, watch the show. And we'd like you to do that. Watch the show on our live stream.
You can do it.
And if you go to ESPN_classroom, I believe that that's up there.
That's on Twitter, ESPN_classroom.
Have we gotten that, Oliver? It's up there. So the address is up on ESPN_classroom. Just go to our Twitter feed, and we're going to get up on the Facebook page as well. You just look for the Center for Sports Communication on Facebook. Like us. We don't have enough likes. And by the way, there are some interns whose grades are largely dependent on the number of likes they get.
So more interns than just Mike aren't doing their job.
Oh, no. No one's doing their job.
Oh, okay.
No one's doing their job right now. Let me take that back. Michael Hines, he's waving his hand. So yeah,
what's he supposed to be doing?
I don't know. And I'm not
but
sure.
But he's waving his
but
hand.
Right now doing he's it. Doing his job. Doug Cannon set this up yesterday. He's doing his job.
Okay. Oliver's done all right this morning. As far as we know, he's got our guest name spelled correctly.
Yep, yeah. So Oliver's doing a good job. I got a few kids that are going to be working on our UNU blog. Swarm Intelligence. Be looking for that, by the way, fans of the Center for Sports Communication. We'll be having a new blog feature that's going to be coming out, working on swarm intelligence. So if you want to know who's going to win the Super Bowl, you'll be able to look to the Center for Sports Communication to get your answer, because we're going to be harnessing the power of collective IQ to get answers about sporting events.
Oh, I'll call my bookie. Sports gambling, of course, illegal in this state.
Well, and that's why you need a bookie. That's why you need a bookie. Wouldn't that be interesting if, with everything that's becoming illegal in this country, if all of a sudden then gambling just got legalized?
I mean, I think gambling should be legalized.
You think everything should be legal?
A lot of things. Not everything. Most things. Yeah.
What should be legal? What's the most outrageous thing you think should be legal that's illegal right now?
The most outrageous thing?
The thing that we're all going to be like, come on.
Nothing. Drugs. Mostly drugs.
All drugs.
Which is funny, because I have am not at all, it's not at all for me personally. It just doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense to me. And it's part of what we're going to talk about in the classroom this morning.
That's right.
You know, Olympic gold medals stripped because of doping in sports. You make these laws around drug use in sports, in other places in society, and it just becomes impossible to enforce. And you create this tangled web of legal and illegal, and this line is always moving as to what is banned and what is acceptable. You just get these situations that are untenable. And that's what we've got. You know, Usain Bolt is losing a gold medal because someone on his relay team tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. And let's just stop this nonsense.
Let's stop it.
Done.
It's done.
Done. Settled. On to the next.
The relay ones are always weird. When you take away the entire relay medal stream because one guy did not follow the protocol, did not follow the rules. That's always a little bit risky. It's always taking away medals past tense. What are you going to do with that?
It's like vacating wins in college football. It's just dumb. Everybody knows who won the race.
Speaking of vacating wins, another program that some might think should be vacating some wins is Louisville.
Yes. Our favorite story of all time.
The story won't quit.
Is back in the news. Louisville men's basketball's mother-daughter prostitution scandal is back in the news.
It's your favorite story?
It is. Well, no.
Yeah,
no,
wait.
No.
That's your favorite story?
It is.
It's an amazing story.
It is one of the greatest stories in the history of sports journalism.
I'd agree.
I think politics has their Watergate. We got Louisville.
If you're not familiar, a couple of years ago came out that Louisville men's basketball, via one of their assistant coaches, was hosting essentially strippers and prostitutes for their underage recruits and hosting them in an on-campus dorm.
As you do.
This week,
it was a recruiting strategy.
Yeah.
This week, Louisville finally responded to the charges.
Make America great again.
And Louisville said this. Yeah, we did it. We did do it. Now, here's what we'd like to push back on. Rick Pitino didn't know about it. And we didn't get any sort of advantage for doing it. In fact, most children did not like it.
They didn't add that part. They didn't have the last part, did they?
They added the part that said many athletes didn't like it. Yeah. Many of the prospective student athletes actually found it to be uncomfortable.
Look, guys,
which is not surprising.
Guys, I know we had a birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese. I understand that. And yes, we served cake and we served ice cream. But I got to tell you, most kids didn't like the cake. I understand. Parents, we know you're upset that your kid's a little too hyped up on sugar right now. We get it. But in all fairness, the kids didn't like the cake. They didn't like the cake. Yes, I understand. They were there. They might have eaten the cake. Take this analogy however you'd like. They might have eaten the cake. They might have even come back for seconds. But they didn't like it.
Also, that cake had no bearing on whether your child decided to be friends with my child. Had no bearing.
And to close the circle of the analogy, it's just important for you to note, the cake was related to the ice cream.
And also, just in case, I want you to know that I, as the parent of the child who is having the birthday party, had no knowledge there would be cake or ice cream that was brought in by a rogue third-party actor. I had no previous knowledge of any dessert. In fact, when I learned that there was dessert, I was appalled.
Yep. We have never had dessert at a party before. It's never happened. I hope people are following along.
If you're just joining us, Louisville men's basketball has responded to roughly 40 NCAA allegations of impropriety that they hosted sex parties for recruits in an on-campus dorm. And again, the thing that most people were outraged about with this whole thing was that it was on campus. They're like, well, you don't do that on campus. Take that down the street.
That's right. That's what the seedy part of town is for.
I love this story. We're going to get into that more in our second hour. And we're also going to meet our new friend Steve from Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
This is the part where you tell people Pro Football Focus is.
Well, you guys know more about it. So Pro Football Focus is a data and analytics service for professional football. They essentially go deep into the sport that we all love and watch and give you – I mean, you guys know more about it than I do. They basically are telling you every single piece of data that you could possibly ever want to know about every athlete that plays football. And people use that – I mean, teams are using that for a lot of different reasons. I think they do business with 24 of 32 NFL teams. I think you're seeing leagues get involved with it. Obviously, people in the draft side get interested in that kind of stuff. What can we do with this data? And fans are really interested in it. They use it on the broadcast side, so a lot of you guys are seeing it. Well, it was on ESPN and so forth. But a lot of fans are interested in it because of fantasy. So it allows you to make really smart picks for your fantasy team. There is an ongoing creep towards more and more data and analytics as part of both the operation of football, which is a heavy data sport, as well as the spectator side of football, which is, you know, in all sports. And so I think this fits in well into that narrative. It's interesting. As we become kind of dumber as a country, we become smarter sports fans.
At least we got that going for us.
So, right?
How about this? Pro Football Talk on their way to the Super Bowl. Yeah. They're on their way to the Super Bowl. They're going to be on Radio Row, but where's their first stop?
The classroom.
Right here.
Wait, look. All roads to Super Bowl 51 go through the classroom. Am I wrong?
The Atlanta Falcons knew it. The New England Patriots knew it. Pro Football Talk knows it.
I should be going to the Super Bowl, by the way.
And yet you're not. It's in your hometown.
It's in my hometown. We should, you know, we should have done the, we should, maybe we'll do this next week. Let's do the entire.
Go to the Super Bowl?
No, let's let's do entire.
We got excited there for a second.
That would be such a cheat. I thought tickets are got to be expensive, like the plane tickets right now.
Got. I think we'd be staying in Kansas, too.
No, we'd stay in my place. My mom's place.
Oh, I like how it's your place.
What's nice? It's a big old condo at a huge club.
No. I don't live with my mom. My mom lives with me.
We go stay at my mom's place.
I'm sure she'd be happy to have us.
It's a big place. We all fit.
She wouldn't even know. She wouldn't even know we're there.
No, and also, but it's a big condo in a it's hard like a big club, like an upscale health fitness club kind of. There's pools, yeah, resort pools.
Like a community.
And look it up. I'll give it to you on the break. You'll like this place.
Okay. Is this for people of a certain age?
No,
or is anyone welcome?
No.
Trying to be nice about it.
No, it's not a retirement community.
Okay.
No. You'll look it up. Trust me. I actually had my rehearsal dinner for my wedding there.
You had your rehearsal dinner for your wedding?
At the club.
At your mom's house?
No, at the club. She didn't live there then. I also had my bar mitzvah there. My bar mitzvah.
So this place is like responsible for many of the seminal moments in your life.
Yep.
And now it's going to host the classroom live from the Super Bowl.
We should have gone down there and gotten ourselves involved with that. That would have been fun to be down at the Super Bowl, but we're not. I don't have plans. I'm actually going to Houston the week after that.
Mm. Probably a good week to go unless you wanted to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm going there for a charity auction that I run.
Okay.
So that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
So, by the way... I know where to get the football skills competition, which I'm dying to talk about. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, yes.
I want to talk about The Hunted.
Okay, I do too. I love this show.
So The Hunted is...
But we can't talk about it right now because we have to take a break. But we're going to talk about it on the other side of this timeout. Come on back. More of the classroom ahead. Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Sports here on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. I'm Jeff Brault alongside Dr. Keith Strudler. Mike and Matt hanging out along with... we had a whole host of technical people in our live stream studio during the break. They were turning cameras around. We're demanding they stop.
Like a pit crew.
It's unbelievable.
A lot of yelling.
Tears.
So you know what I watched last night?
The Hunted? Except you didn't watch it last night. It was on last night.
I watched The Hunted on Wednesday.
Yep.
Which is a great
show. Love The Hunted.
We should go on The Hunted.
I could do it. You couldn't do it.
Oh, no. I'd do it way better than you would.
You would lose in minutes.
No way.
And again, spoiler alert, the hot young couple from South Carolina who got busted by taking money out of the ATM at the bus station, who got busted in literally like 4 hours.
They're like, they're not dumb enough to take money from a bus station and then get on the only bus leaving that bus station, would they? Maybe they are.
They are. They were that dumb. That would be you. You have no survival instincts.
No, that's
None.
Not true. That's not true.
And you have no impulse
First
control.
All,
that would be your problem.
That
is the impulse
that
control.
That is a problem. But here's the thing. You're not willing. I'll go live out in the wilderness.
I'll live it for.
I'll live in a carcass of a bear.
Here's what you don't know
don't
about
care.
Me. If there's a competition to be had, I will cut off my arm to win.
Well, look, there's one of us here is a competitive Division I athlete, and that's me. You're nothing. And so I will get up there.
I am so much more competitive than you.
That
so much more.
Absolutely not true. Winning is my middle name and my ethos. I am Keith Winning Strudler. That's who I am. And so that is Mike Wallace is just shaking his head. like I insulted the English language. But so I'm a winner and I would win this thing, and you'd be my drag. And let me also tell you, you don't have survival skills. I, as we went
it's,
over
It's not about survival skills. The people who spent 15 days in the woods lost. Again, sorry. Spoiler alert. Hopefully you've been keeping up on your hunted.
That's the worst part. They're like, remember when they were in their car? Because a lot of people are hunkering down in houses. They're like, they're just in the woods. And they're on the drive back, they're like, it's going to take us a long time to get over this.
And here's this idiocy. They borrow some stranger's phone after emerging from the woods in a campground. They find some stranger. These people spent 15 days living on the lam. They borrow some stranger's phone to call their friend to try to get help. And they put it on speakerphone. And all the friend on the other end is talking about is how there's wanted posters of them everywhere. And now these people are looking at him at this rest stop like, are they going to kill us? Is this how we die?
And then I remember he comes by the friend, like one of the friends comes and finds him on an ATV. They're like, he followed you here. Don't drive that ATV near us. So, but here's what you don't have that I do have. And we went over this before the show, perhaps never been announced on the classroom before. I am a former assistant scoutmaster.
It's true. I didn't believe it either, people. It's true. When Keith Strudler was in college, he was an assistant scoutmaster.
That's right. And you
probably never spent a minute in the woods.
No, that's not true. So I was, so what happened was, I took this class, right? And it was an education class. It was like working with youth groups. And everyone's like, I'm going to work with this. And everyone was working with like these like really kind of high-minded. And I was like, I can't do any of those. I'm going to work with the boy. I don't know why it came to my head. I was like, they're like, what do you want? I was like, I'll be a scoutmaster. Now, mind you, that's ambitious. I just said I'll help with the scouts. I mean, I dreamed that someday I'd be an assistant scoutmaster. That's what everyone dreams about.
Work your way up.
But at this point, I'm like, look, I'll take any job with the
Build
scouts.
Build a couple winning Pinewood Derby cars, and you never know what'll happen.
So at this point, I just want to be involved. Right? I just want to be a volunteer. So.
You didn't want to be a volunteer.
No, that's
No, you were probably like, I don't know why I'm not getting paid for this. All the work I'm putting into it.
So,
I'm the best assistant scoutmaster ever.
So I joined the scouts. Now, mind you, my scouting experience, I was a scout when I was a kid for a few years at the JCC. JCC didn't take scouting very seriously. Mm-hmm. So I never actually got, I guess when you join, you're like automatically get like the scout badge. Like there's one badge that comes with being a scout. And then the next one, which is like just, they basically give it just the tenderfoot. And then you move into the real stuff. 2.5 years, I never made past tenderfoot. I got sent to scout camp. I got 2 badges for 2 years. And I'm not kidding. 2 years, wood carving and basket weaving.
Okay.
But I figure.
Yeah. And so you're going to be fine living in the woods for 28
well,
days.
I'll make us a trivet. I'll tell you that.
While the world's. What's that? They're going to put a hot pot on?
If we could just get some soup, we'll be fine. We won't burn anything.
I think the key to hunted is not to go live out in the woods because you can't do it for 28 days.
You think it's a hiding in plain sight?
I think it's hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
I think it's hiding in plain sight. You got to find a major population
center. They were trying to get to Atlanta. A lot of people were trying to get to Atlanta.
Yep.
Because they did have, it's a southeastern U.S. block.
Yes, you have to stay in a, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama,
really Atlanta,
Florida.
Atlanta is your home base on that because it's a big city, big sprawling city. But I'll tell you what, after you watch this thing, now my wife knows one of the
hunters.
Yes, one of the hunters fairly well through her work. Which is great. Now, my point is this. I can't guarantee that I can get us on, but I've got an actual contact to leadership on the show. Like, I'm not, I mean, we talk about ridiculous things, But we talked about getting to the Iron Bowl. We got to the Iron Bowl.
Well, they have to come to the Northeast. We don't have any connections in the Mid-South.
No, but I can get to the actual show leadership.
No, but what I'm saying is the show has to be taking place around where we live.
We can go wherever. Once we're taking 20 days off.
Yeah, but we don't have any connect. Who are we going to call for a ride in Suwanee, Georgia?
Well, I have some summits. So, you know what I'd like, boy, if they got to the Texas area.
Well, again, yes, that's my point. They have to do the show in an area we have connections.
Northeast is tough.
Northeast would be tough.
I think they picked that area because, look, there's not that many places you can go. Northeast is tough.
A lot of places.
And here's the other thing I think is nerve-wracking, and I actually give the people on the show a lot of credit. So all of a sudden, like you kind of referenced, there are like these wanted posters with these people's faces on it floating all around. What's to keep someone from like pulling out a weapon and just like they're like, we're going to bring him in. We're going to bring him in dead or alive. Like, I wouldn't want my face on a wanted poster just floating all over the place.
Maybe you shouldn't sign up for Hunted. It's a great show, CBS Wednesday nights. Check it out. We're going to be talking more about it in the classroom.
Here's the other thing. Let's face it. Everyone's going to know, because it's me, like, they're going to be like, oh, that's Keith Strudler.
And we're done.
We saw him on PBS.
This week, the International Olympic Committee has stripped some folks of medals that they have won many, many moons ago because they found out that back in the day they were doping. The most famous Olympian to lose a medal this week, Usain Bolt, the Jamaican sprinter, had 9 Olympic golds, and now it's down to 8 because one of his relay teammates, Nesta Carter, who I'm sure you've never heard of, was found guilty of doping at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Apparently, the IOC is still testing samples from the 2008 Beijing Olympics and found in retests of Carter's sample that he took a banned stimulant that I cannot pronounce, Keith Strudler. You want to take a crack at it?
Can I see it?
Yeah, it's right there.
That's mexahethyladramine.
No.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Wait, methylhexanamine.
Okay.
Methylhexanamine.
That's as close as I got, but then there's that.
There's got to be like a street
name.
There's that
A-N-E-A part of it, which is like.
But I bet you there's like a street name like, oh, that's like egg batter.
Anyway, this guy took that, and now Jamaica's gold medal winning 4x100 relay team in 2008 had to give back one of their gold medals.
It's a popular rave drug.
I think I'm on record as saying this.
You don't like it.
Any sort of altering of history? Stupid. It's a stupid punishment.
So the revisionist history is very tough, particularly, and this came up, any of you watched the movie 979, which was a 30 for 30 done about the 1988 100-meter dash Olympic finals, which Ben Johnson won in record-setting fashion over Carl Lewis, and it was really a historic moment. Basically, immediately thereafter, Ben Johnson tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. They stripped him of a medal, and history continued, right? And eventually, Carl Lewis was given that medal. Towards the end of that film, spoiler alert, boy, we're really killing everything. They went ahead and interviewed some of the people that were overseeing drug testing during that time period, and they had the opportunity to go back and look at some of these samples now with the tools that they did not have then. And it became very obvious that they would find PEDs throughout that competition.
Shocking.
So some of these athletes that were awarded medals that everyone considered clean may not have been.
Are you telling me, now hold on, are you telling me that when sport comes out with a list of banned substances, that athletes who are paragons of virtue are trying to come up with substances that aren't detectable by the test? I don't believe it, Keith Strudler. I don't believe it.
I'm just telling you that some of these guys get away with it and some of them don't.
No. You're telling me, hold on. You're trying to tell me that there are high-level athletes that have been taking performance-enhancing drugs but haven't been caught?
I have no proof, but I'm suggesting this happened. So, when you start to go back and take away a medal from someone, ex post facto,
yes,
after it's over, and award it to someone else, you are getting into a bowl of soup that may not be quite as tasty as you think it is.
Also, can we get a statute of limitations on this thing? 2008 was 9 years ago.
Sure. And look, if you want to, the problem is this opens a Pandora's box that is above and beyond, right? It's this enormous Pandora's box because you might also come to realize that, well, now there are things that people were taking then that are banned today.
Sure.
How do you deal with that?
That's what happened to Maria Sharapova. Right. Maria Sharapova caught a 2-year ban from international tennis because one day something she was taking that was perfectly legal suddenly became illegal.
And so, what they aren't giving are psychological evaluations. We don't know their intent to cheat. We also know that everyone will push up to the edge of what's acceptable.
Sure.
And so we don't know their intent to kind of run afoul of the law. We don't, and that really shouldn't be the jurisdiction of drug testing anyway. But I, you are opening this enormous Pandora's box when you do this. Now, let's look at it from the other perspective.
Okay.
We had someone from the Last Gold here, which is a documentary about the 1976 Olympic Games, which was the height of the East German steroid era.
Yep.
And it was particularly about the East German women's swim team.
Sure, that's exactly what I was going to like, the East German women's swim team, who looked like the East German weightlifting team.
So they were, and admittedly, you know, and it's all come out, they were all jacked up on steroids. And it was an abusive, really, I mean, totalitarian, as bad as you can imagine.
I believe the drug test they used to catch them was looking at them.
the eye test?
Exactly.
So there are a lot of women on that team in the documentary that to this day are still upset about being denied a gold medal that they feel they rightfully won and deserved. That they were put into a situation that took all of their dignity away, I suppose, because they competed, and I'll take them at their word, as clean, honest, fair competitors. And the East Germans, in most cases, not because of their own volition, but because of their government and their coaches, were forced to compete unfairly by
so
their government.
I think comes into play there, because the 70s was not the designer drug era that it is today in sports.
There were no Gucci drugs.
There's no such thing as a quote-unquote clean athlete at the highest levels anymore. Show me a guy who's not on something.
I'm not saying
they're all taking something that's banned,
but
they are all on supplements.
Some of them are just high on life.
And I promise you they're not. I promise you they're not. Everybody at a high level. And again, everybody,
Matt,
100% is a very dangerous thing to say. But
name me an athlete that's high on life. Look this up. Find me an athlete.
Okay. Tim Tebow. And look how much success he's had.
find me a star athlete who is high on life.
But look, we live in the pharmaceutical era right now, not just in sports.
Yep.
How many people are walking around with a little something to get them through the day? Like, we live in the era, and this is okay, by the way, where medical science and pharmaceutical science has gotten to a certain point where it can be used to improve performance.
Are we talking about a futuristic?
No, we're talking about where we live right now.
Yeah, yes.
So why are we denying that the future has existed?
Right, because
the future is now.
Well, I'll tell you why we're denying. Because apparently, according to our new U.S. policies, we deny the future completely, as well as the present, by the way. So, and the past. So that bridge has already been crossed. But I understand what you're saying, and we've had this discussion on the air many times, right? The idea that everyone cheats a little bit, right?
I don't even think I don't even like calling it cheating.
Everyone is using something, and there's an arbitrary line that they draw down the middle of what's fair and what's not, according to the rules.
Yeah.
And then half the people get away with it, and half of them don't. Right? Got it. And some guys are going to get into the Hall of Fame, and some guys are going to be, you know, villainized forever. Got it. And a lot of that has to do simply with their own personality.
Absolutely.
All right? Get it. That doesn't answer the question about what to do. We had this conversation this morning. As much as I may not like all the rules, I still find value in rules. Like, I may not like the speed limit all the time, but if someone's driving 90 miles an hour, it's probably going to have to get pulled over. Even if it's in Arizona in the desert, he's probably going to have to get pulled over because there are rules. And if you don't want to follow the rules, you are going to have to kind of...
So speed limits exist not to protect the person driving 90 miles an hour, but to protect the person driving next to the person driving 90 miles an hour.
Yes and no. Some rules are there to protect us from ourselves.
No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't be.
All right, libertarian.
I'm really not, though.
Well, that sounds...
I'm a non-hypocritical liberal, I guess. I don't know. But I wouldn't classify it as libertarian. The problem is there's you know, people that
you
are for...
You just said you are not... You are
yeah, because
labeled
I'm, honestly,
yourself
I'm
as not
for,
hypocritical.
I'm for freedom. And that's in all things.
We're all for freedom.
I'm also for freedom for things I don't agree with. Me personally, would like, say, stricter laws on guns. But me politically recognizes that the freedom has to exist.
We are going way off track here.
No, but it's a difference between a speed limit, which is designed to a rule that exists to stop.
It's also to maintain
to protect the other people.
It's also to maintain
the drug rules aren't
war.
In place to protect the other people. They're in place to limit what you as an individual can do. The drug rules don't exist because they're worried that athlete X is going to hurt themselves.
We do protect ourselves from ourselves sometimes. We do legally. Sometimes we do.
But it's unnecessary.
I know you don't like that.
Yeah, it's just unnecessary.
Like, you don't want people in your business. I get that. All right. That's fine, and you believe that, you know, there should just be logical consequences that follow on your own actions. If it harms you, it harms you. I don't necessarily believe that's how society should always act. To some degree, there's some things I agree with on that. Not all. All right. That said, because I think the collective, goes back to swarm intelligence, is more intelligent than the individual. And sometimes individual decisions are really, really poor. And sometimes those collective
sure.
decisions that are made through laws are better.
I don't agree with you, but you can't have laws against bad decisions.
Maybe we should.
No.
All right, that's fine. I agree with you. That still does not resolve the question of what to do when someone clearly broke a rule, a firm rule, right? And another person did not, at mm-hmm. least according to
yes.
the rule books that we have.
Correct.
And that person may have unfairly mm-hmm. been denied
so,
something they worked for their entire
honestly,
life.
Honestly, I believe that if you break a stupid rule, there should be a stupid penalty. And that's exactly what we have.
So the stupid penalty, maybe we should make them like walk around in their underpants with like goggles on and sing yeah. and sing like
you
sing
take
an
away,
Elton John song.
No, the stupid rule is, you know, you use something
what Elton John
that
song
you can't use it. We couldn't detect the time, but 9 years later we found out you were using it. Who is the guy still testing samples from 2008? Like, I'm gonna get him.
I think they should have to sing Crocodile Rock.
And the stupid penalty is we're gonna take away your little memento. That says you won a race that there were cameras on and everybody knows you won.
It's not a little. That's because you've never won anything in your entire life. It's not a little memento.
These guys know they won. They know they won the race. All they're doing is taking away their certificate.
They know they won, but I'm sure it hurts giving back that gold.
I'm sure it does. Yes, and that's why they have to pay a stupid penalty for violating a stupid rule.
But they know they won, but then you're ignoring the psychology of it. I think guys that cheat a lot, maybe I'm getting too much inside the head of certain people. I think they carry some guilt with them.
I wouldn't have the slightest idea if they do.
This is my Elliot Spitzer kind of theory.
So you're telling me this guy wanted to give back his gold medal all these years, and now a great burden has been lifted off his shoulders because 9 years later he finally got caught? You're telling me it's like the career thief?
It's
who,
like,
when he's in his old age, finally gets caught, and when they, like, bang down his door, he's like, I've been waiting for this day.
It's like Elliot Spitzer, right? Everyone's like, why did he break the law that he created? Like, he knew he was going to get caught, like, when he had the prostitutes. Like, he knew he built this law because he wanted to get caught. There's a psychology there. So, if we play along with this, perhaps these guys, yeah, they won the medals, but maybe, I mean, so some of them live in their own kind of they almost have, I don't want to say like this is a little bit of a stretch, but they almost have like the O.J. syndrome, syndrome where they believe they're innocent. Like they're like, if you can convince yourself that everyone took steroids, mm-hmm. then that's fine. Then you believe, hey, I won fairly because everyone's cheating and those rules are completely arbitrary. And I'm sure a lot of athletes do buy into that. I'm sure in the baseball era, the baseball steroid era, that really kind of overruled everything. And in cycling too.
Mm-hmm.
At the height of cycling drugs, everyone was like,
and
look.
In track and field.
Yes.
How many people... how many track athletes that the regular person would know have been embroiled in some sort of drug scandal? 98%? I'm trying to think of one that hasn't.
There have been a lot, because even a lot of...
Because, like, Usain Bolt's never been caught, but clearly he's embroiled in scandal.
And now there's a lot of the distance runners, like, have been, because they're working with Alberto Salazar,
right.
are in the middle
and
of a,
so
like,
this
the
is
Prozac
what, this
era.
Is what gets me about the people that are like, oh,
and
catch
the
cheats,
have long,
ban
long
the cheats, ban the cheats. Do you really think that if the top 7 people in the sport are doing it, that the bad ones aren't? That the bad ones are looking at the people getting millions and millions of dollars in endorsement deals and international fame and all of the trappings that go along with being one of the few elite players in a niche sport. That they're looking at them like, I just wish I could do it, but I can't bring myself to it. I have too much virtue.
They have their dignity. Look, I hear you. And I actually agree with you to some degree. I don't think it's fair to say just because some people cheat, they all cheat. That's not fair.
No, again, all is an impossible thing to prove because it implies 100%. Exactly. And it's certainly not 100%.
And I'm with you to the extent that I never understood that people were like, but Lance is clean. I'm like, yeah, they've caught every other guy in the sport, but right. The guy who's beaten them all 7 years in a row, right. He's the clean guy. We literally have a Superman.
Almost without question, winning the Tour de France 7 times, especially after having cancer. But it's almost unquestionably the greatest sporting achievement of all
time.
That's
right. It is. I'm glad. It is, in my mind, I can't think of anything that has come close to that.
I honestly can't either.
Without the cancer.
The fact that he did it even on the drugs is unbelievably impressive.
It is. There's nothing like that, not only in our lifetime, in any lifetime. It would be like a tennis pro winning every tournament for 7 years in a row. It's that good. Or winning every major for 70.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
It's probably close to right. Yeah.
And it's because it is impossible to do this. And it's so, you could have anything go wrong at any time, including just a bike wreck.
And again, I think the Lance Armstrong case is a perfect example of a lot of things we've been talking about. One, Lance Armstrong kind of became vilified because he so ardently professed his innocence for
jerk.
So long.
And he brought people, he was a jerk.
People love to see people like that fail or fall or what have you. And then everybody he was competing against has been caught.
Yeah, a couple of obvious reasons. And so he antagonized the wrong people. He, by the way, little lesson, he challenged the press.
Right.
Who has in the long run, and I know we're in a new world, I don't want to get too political, who's challenged the press and won?
No one, you can't. It's impossible. Don't pick fights with people who buy ink by the barrel.
I know, but there's no more ink left. But...
whatever, domain names, it doesn't matter. These people have all of you can't. There's too many of them.
Right. But who has ever really, really beat a Gary Hart? No. Nixon? No.
Nobody.
But I'm thinking of athletes. Athletes.
But that's because we as a society love to build people up, to tear them down.
That is fun.
Nobody gets built up and then let to live. Just doesn't happen. Gotta bring them down.
You gotta bring them down.
Gotta bring them down. You're next, Usain Bolt. They're coming for you.
I was in Jamaica, over break.
Mm. Did you meet Usain?
You know, we didn't. I would have liked to have gone for a run with him.
Yeah, it would have been nice. You and your deluded mind would be like, I can keep up.
Well, in all fairness, he's not a distance runner.
Yeah, I'm sure you could take him.
Oh, I'd beat him for a 5 mile race. I'd beat Usain Bolt. He doesn't. They don't
say it again.
For a 5 mile race, I'd beat Usain Bolt.
Say it one more time.
In a 5 mile race, I'd beat Usain Bolt.
Oliver, do we have clean audio of that?
Take four.
We're gonna find a time of Usain Bolt running 5 miles.
It doesn't. I mean, give me this. I know my track and field. These guys don't run long.
I agree with you.
They don't.
He's a sprinter.
They just don't. If you make them run over a quarter mile, they're like, you're out of your mind.
I bet he can do it.
No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. He cannot. He will not run a fast 5 mile race. He won't do it. He will not do it. Like, they just, it's not the, and look, I'm not the 5 mile runner I used to be when I was in college. In college, I would crush him over 5 miles.
Are you saying he goes full Seinfeld? I will not run?
He's like you in that Atlanta airport.
We don't rush. I don't rush.
There's the plane.
I don't rush.
By the way, I'm going to be doing, I'm flying Southwest on my next trip.
Okay. You're getting a good check in early.
Yeah, I'll check in early, but I got kids. That usually pushes you up a little bit. They have a kid section.
Oh, okay.
So I'll take advantage of that.
Sure, why not?
But
make the rest of the people who made good decisions not have to wait.
You say having kids is a bad decision?
Oh, I would never, ever say that. I would never say that. No,
no, no, no. Yeah, he is. Jeff is the most selfish, egocentric, non-compassionate, a living thing. I would say human, but there are a lot. I mean, I don't want to ignore, like, the bears and the dogs.
No, here's my...
Did anyone see that video? Wait, did anyone see the video of the dog saving the other dog
yes.
with a stick?
Yes, I did.
Oh, come on. How touching is that?
That was beautiful.
You would be like... literally be like, that dog made a bad decision.
Here's probably did. Dog should have smartened up. Dog probably cost a lot of public resources to try to rescue.
No.
But here's my point. Listen, hey, do what you want. But have some kids, have some kids. Don't use your children to get priority boarding access.
Why not? All right, fine.
You got them, use them.
No, that's fine. You know what? you sit next to Elliot for four hours. That's fine. You sit next to Elliot. So when he's like, I spilled my juice on my pants, you deal with it.
No, but I don't have to deal with it.
Oh, you'll deal with it, whether you want to deal with it or not.
I didn't build that house. I don't have to lie in that bed that I didn't make.
You're going to deal with it because it's going to be in your face. So you're going to be dealing with it when he's screaming.
No, I am going to make passive-aggressive comments at you for not dealing with it, because that's the life I've chosen.
You're going to be sitting there trying to watch a video like reruns of House Hunters International, and instead, that's a great show.
Great show.
What was I saw?
I'll have you know, by the way, these headphones, noise-canceling. That kid can scream his head off. I'm not hearing a thing.
I know we got to go to break. I watched the worst House Hunters International might end last night. It's a young couple going to Milan. Ooh. And he's like, they're looking at all these apartments, and he's finding these ones that have like modern conveniences, a kitchen that you could walk into. And she's like, it just doesn't feel like Italy. And finally, they found something that looked like it hasn't been renovated since like the 1500s. She's like, oh, this is the one. Because she's like, it's a true Italian experience. Mm. And he's like, is it okay if we have a working toilet? Like, I can't walk into that room. Like,
this always happens on these shows. You know what I've noticed? I am waiting for the episode where the realtor, they go and the guy's like, I want to live in a downtown modern loft. And the girl goes, I want to live in a country farmhouse. And then they look at the realtor, they go, what do we need? I'm waiting for the show where the realtor goes, a divorce.
They do. They pick the most opposite things. And be like, I'd like a condo on the beach. And he's like, I'd like a chalet in the mountains. Let's see if we can find something in between for this urban suburban couple in Toronto.
And it has to be under their budget of $150,000.
I actually like the ones where they're like, they've got a budget of $1.4 million, and they walk into like the most palatial, they're like, it still doesn't have the woodwork I was looking
for. Here's what I don't get. So most of the people on these shows are young. They're in their late 20s, early 30s.
Why are they buying anything?
Well, not even that. But then, they talk about their jobs. It's like, so-and-so's a junior marketing executive. And she's an elementary school teacher. Their budget is $8 million. I'm like, where are these people getting this money?
I do see the ones. Like, he's an intern at the sanitation department. She's a stay-at-home mom of seven. They've set their budget at $800,000.
Exactly.
She's like, I'd like to stay a little under. He's like, I think we can stretch it.
And then they're like, this is a little over budget, $840,000. And they're like, well, we do have that money we were saving for renovations. I'm like, where is this coming from? And these people are all drug dealers.
The money is completely ridiculous. And one person's always like, I'd like to stay under the budget. The other one's, I don't care. I don't care. Got my man cave.
We got to take a quick break. We'll be back after this with more of The Classroom, Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. We go to the second hour of The Classroom, live from the Marist College Center for Sports Communication in Poughkeepsie. I'm Jeff, he's Keith. Mike and Matt are also hanging around. And Matt, last name again? Jakevich?
That's good.
What letters does it start with?
I'm not going to tell you.
Well, no, it's time. This is a big reveal.
Okay. Do we have guesses or should I just go for it?
Well, I know it because I looked it up.
Oh, okay. No. R.
R. Who had R?
Oh, I actually had Z, and even though I've seen it.
R.
Even though I've seen it.
Jakevich. Jakevich starts with R.
Do you know any languages other than English?
No.
Despite that last name?
Nope, that's it. Mm.
Do your parents know any language other than English?
Nope.
Do their parents know any language? We're going to keep going until we get
I think so,
some Polish or Russian in there.
Yeah, Polish. That's it. Polish.
We'll keep going. To their parents.
I'm sure someone did. This is the great thing about America. You go back far enough, nobody's from here.
Well,
except for some First Nations people.
My mom doesn't, they don't know any other language. My grandmother, she spoke some Yiddish.
Okay.
She had Yiddish. I believe my grandfather probably spoke, it may have been Russian. It didn't translate down.
Okay. My grandfather on my dad's side, who I never met, died when I was young, spoke French. So that's how far back I have to go. I don't know how far back I have to go on my mom's side. At least three generations.
We should bring back Yiddish.
All right.
That's a language.
Did it ever, Why? Did it ever leave?
It wasn't really an official language. Mm. It was just a hodgepodge of things. Yiddish is kind of a combination of stuff.
Oh, is that right? I thought it actually was a real.
I mean, it was an informal, formal language.
Interesting. Okay.
So it was.
It's like a dialect. Or maybe like a tongue.
It is. It had a lot of German or Russian in it. And then influences of Hebrew.
That's interesting.
So it was a lot, because you're talking about a lot of people that were exiled, a lot of Jewish folks that were exiled that had that had, you know, Russian or German, I should know this better, as kind of their native tongue, and they were kind of forming this new dialect that was, you know, kind of put a lot of these things together with a lot of kind of Jewish Hebrew influences on them. And so it became this kind of mix of everything, and Yiddish became kind of a mix of stuff. So it is almost like a slang in a lot of ways.
I've learned something today. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, it's very much, it's kind of died off in this country with this generation because there's so much assimilation. If you go back a generation or two, before there was so much Jewish assimilation, Yiddish was much more of a thing. And now you really have to kind of go back to, like, grandparents to even understand it.
Here's what we've got for you in the second hour of the classroom this morning. We're going to talk about the way data and analytics is changing the game of football. We've seen baseball, basketball go through massive shifts because of the availability of new important data. And now, thanks to Pro Football Focus and people like that, this shift is changing football. It's changing the way front office executives scout, draft, play. It's changing the way that media covers the game, and it's changing the way the fans who are interested in fantasy football or perhaps in the one or two states in which it's legal, sports betting, because no one else can do it. The data is really changing all of these things.
Total off.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Carlos Slim is a great name for a billionaire.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
He's the richest man in Mexico.
That's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Slim.
Also a great name for an oil baron.
But by the way, if your last name is Slim, you got to be hefty. You have to be jumping.
He's not.
He's ironically?
Slim. Yeah. Like how they call. Yeah, no, he's not. Though.
I'm all in on the ironic names.
Yes.
I'm upset that Carlos
like
Slim.
Yeah.
I'm upset that Carlos Slim didn't marry a woman named Virginia.
Oh, that would have been good.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, though.
No?
No. I don't know who he married.
I don't know who he married. Well, so you don't know that didn't happen. Yeah, who's Carlos? I bet you I see Carlos Slim as a guy who's maybe been married a couple times.
I know very little about him.
Sumaya Domit.
Oh, boy.
Jemaya.
All right. First wife?
Yeah, she's... Yeah.
First wife. I wonder if they were together before he got the money.
Well, I hope
so. She died.
Oh, that's
she
tragic.
She passed away.
Oh.
When's that? When did that happen?
Oh, 1999. He hasn't married since.
Well, now he's got a... I mean, I think he's...
Maybe he's grief-stricken. But now you got so much money, how can you tell if somebody's...
Well, you can't tell. If you're that rich, you can never tell if someone wants you for your money. That's why if you're a guy like that, you have to kind of pretend you don't have money and then hope that someone falls in love with you not for your money. And then you tell them later on, like, as you're kind of like... After you get married, you're like... And they're like trying to figure out, like, oh, we can't afford this apartment. How are we going to make it? And you're like...
Surprise, honey! I've been lying to you!
No, but you tell them, oh, by the way... I'm an oil baron. Like, I'm worth billions of dollars.
Do you know what I find women really like? When entire relationships are based on lies.
No, come on.
The plot of a movie. It's the plot of a movie is what it is.
I don't care what it is. I'm telling you that...
It doesn't work in real life. This is why rich people marry other rich people.
No, it's exactly how you should do it in real life. It's exactly what
you should know this as someone who wants to be a rich person. You should know this, that... You have to stay in your circle. You can't marry down. Not serious wealth like Carlos Slim wealth, like top 10 in the world
he
wealth.
You can't marry down?
I mean, well, to be fair, everybody's down because he's so high. But he's got to marry somebody who also, you know, is fine, is set. He's not going to go marry a fourth grade teacher.
That's ridiculous.
It's just not going to happen.
No,
it's just not going to happen.
No, he should.
Can't trust those motives.
He might sign a prenup. But you have to, yeah, he can't, but he has to go find someone who has no idea who he is, who doesn't know he's rich. And then he tells her later, after they're married.
We live in the era where before anybody goes on a date, they Google the other person. How is he going to fly under the radar?
He needs to marry someone who doesn't even want to go on a date with him.
His picture's on the front page of CNN.
who he has to convince, like, I'm going to get a date with her.
Slim is number seven.
Seven in the list of world's richest people. Seven.
Bill Gates is one.
Bill Gates is one.
And where's Warren Buffett on that?
Buffett's going to be on it.
Buffett
probably
is
like
three.
Okay.
What's
three.
Our number two? Zuckerberg?
Amancio Ortega.
Oh, the guy. Yeah. Is he a hotelier?
Spanish business magnate.
Spanish business.
Magnate.
Okay.
He's not a magnate.
He could be a business
magnate.
If you have that much money, maybe that's how he gets it all.
He's a magnate.
Maybe the coins just fly at him.
Give me four through six, and then we got to go to our game.
Jeff Bezos. Amazon. Five and six are the Koch brothers.
Oh, they should put
wait. Which Koch brother has more money than the other?
Charles.
Was he born
more than David?
Was he born first? It might just be he had more.
Tell you what,
I don't know.
529 because his parents were putting.
This is my wish for Keystrother. I want you to become unfathomably rich.
Sure.
But I want you to be just
nice
a little less rich than the person you are closest to. That would destroy you.
So I always feel poor?
That would destroy you.
Hey, let's round it out because it's going to kill me if we don't. Okay. Zuckerberg, 8. Uh-huh. Larry Ellison, 9.
Oracle, yep.
Ingvar Kamprad, 10.
Wait, what does he do?
IKEA.
IKEA.
I wouldn't have guessed.
Wow, 10.
Because you got to sell a lot.
Swedish business magnate and probably business magnate.
You know what? I bet he held on to a high percentage of that company. I bet he owns like 65% of IKEA. Because IKEA is, I mean, it's a big business, but it's not on the level of Facebook and Amazon.
Nope.
Do you think it's his, do you think it's
but he's top 10.
Does he have IKEA furniture in his house?
And no.
I feel like he has to.
And did he put it together? Like, did he put it together?
Well, you know how there's like different levels of Sodexo? Like there's
he's
like really
the,
fancy Sodexo.
He's got like, yeah. He's got like the steak tartare.
Yeah.
Like at the James Brown event at our little reception, he won't be eating the pigs in a blanket. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what he will be eating? The Swedish meatballs.
I like IKEA. I like IKEA. I can't buy stuff in there because I'll just never put it together.
Yeah, no. But you can pay somebody to do it for you.
I know
you.
We got to get to our guests, but I just want to. No one has talked to me about online whether or not. And this question out to the listeners: should I wear a suit?
No one cares.
No, they do care.
No one cares.
They're
going
to care on February 6th,
James
Brown. We're going to care when they see me sitting on the stage with James Brown.
That's enough out of you.
A suit or a blazer.
You know what people do care about? You know what they do care about?
My suit.
Broadening their understanding of the game of football.
All right.
That is something that the people that listen to the classroom, ostensibly a sports broadcast.
And that is this week's big story?
May care about.
Come on.
They may care about learning more about the game of football.
Can we do it? And that's this week's.
It's the big story.
I give credit to Matt, who's producing the show for the first time today, for keeping up with that.
Okay. All right.
So this is the latest we've ever done the big story, I think.
We had a because we figured talking about. Well,
House Hunters International.
Yeah, it just didn't feel like that was a big enough story.
A big story as to why more of those couples are divorced, but not the big story.
All right.
So we have a guest, no?
Yeah.
We do. Pro Football Focus is a football analytics, statistical, and data firm. They help teams with scouting, drafting, in-game decisions based on data. They provide numbers to the media to help fans better understand the game, and they help fans improve their fantasy teams and perhaps, and I know we should keep this hush-hush, maybe win a bet. Because I don't know if you know this, Keystrother, but some people, they gamble on sports.
But data is a big part. I mean, it's a big part of sport. For a long time, it's been a big part of sport on the coaching side.
Absolutely.
And I think this gives coaches and arms them with an entirely new set of tools to use, and I thought the number was I don't want to misspeak, and we'll let our guests speak to that. But many teams, professional football teams, are using this data source. We know a lot of networks use it to bring information to their viewers. But fantasy folks are all over this. And fantasy, I'm not a fantasy guy, so I'll never fully get it. But look, in a game that is determined by statistical kind of dominance, having all the stats that will help you dominate seems, kind of a strategic advantage.
You're a huge fantasy guy. You live in a fantasy world that you're rich and famous and celebrities
and
like you. You just don't play fantasy football.
My God. Just come here on February 6th to watch me hanging out with James Brown, and you'll find out exactly how not fantasy my world of being with celebrities really is.
Too hot in the hot tub. Steve Palazzolo, a senior analyst from Pro Football Focus, is our guest in the classroom this morning. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
For people that maybe have just seen Pro Football Focus when they've been watching a football game, they've seen the statistical analysis, they've been to the website, but they don't have a real in-depth understanding of exactly what you do and all that you do. Give us the 411 on Pro Football Focus.
Sure, yeah, we do a whole lot of different things, but the crux of it is grading every single player on every play in both the NFL and FBS. So every single game, we have our analysts go through. There's various processes, but it's essentially saying how well did a guy do his job on a given play, not necessarily looking at it from a scouting perspective. But, you know, did you make the block or did you not? Did you make the catch? Did you not? Did the quarterback make a great throw that happened to be dropped? That's the type of thing where we'll give proper credit to the quarterback on a good throw that happens to be dropped, even though it goes down as an incompletion, goes down as an 0-for-1. So it's essentially trying to find the truth on every single play. What makes a play work? What makes it not work? And that's where we come up with our individual player grading. And then on the way, we grab a whole bunch of different statistics and different ways of analyzing things. And that's just another added layer of context that we add to that play-by-play grading. So it's a whole bunch of different stuff. And I think we have uses in many different avenues because of it.
Well, who are your primary customers? I mean, we know some of the teams use it, leagues, I'm sure universities, fans. Where does most of this data go?
It goes to various places. So the company is essentially split up into a team that's really focused on the NFL team and college team side. So we have 24, I believe soon to be 25 NFL teams getting all of our data. We have 15 college teams, which could essentially double within the next year, I believe. So they'll take our data, use it in various ways. They throw it into their video system, and you know, they could pull up, hey, give me every time this guy runs a slant. Let me pull that up on video, because you know, that's the type of data that we have. So, you know, from the team side, they're able to use our stuff in various ways. You guys were talking about fantasy. We have a whole fantasy department that has done a fantastic job of taking, you know, they're not really in the data collection process, but they take the data, put a fantasy spin on it, fantasy twist, make sense of it really well to essentially play that game better. And then we have a whole consumer side where fans want to know who the best players are, who are the best teams. What are the trends you're seeing? Who are the up-and-coming players? So that whole side of the deal is another thing. You know, people wanting to know our player grades and our draft, you know, top draft prospects and things like that. So, you know, multiple users for all the data that we have.
Steve, advanced analytics in sports still relatively new when you look at the whole history of games like football, basketball, baseball. What's the biggest change that you've seen in the sport from the fact that now your numbers and your information's out there?
Yeah, I think it's just that I think more people are willing to use it. I think, you know, the media is always kind of looking for a little extra help because they, you know, they're so focused on their team generally, if they're a beat writer. So they're able to use our information to help guide them across, you know, the rest of the league. So they're going up against a team, you know, their team's going up against a team in the other division. They don't know much. Or the other conference, they don't know much about that team. It's easy to just get that information. I'd say from an NFL standpoint, it's ever growing. I think the most unique thing for me is, you know, our 2014 customers, I've been in many meetings with the various teams, and they all have a slightly different approach to things. They all have a different structure within their organization. They all have different wants and needs for this information, but it's ever growing. And I think that's probably the biggest change that I've seen is people more willing to think outside the box just enough to try to get some value out of all the data that we have.
You know, from a fan perspective, we kind of discuss quite a bit how much data is too much. When does it start to take away from the game itself because you're just overwhelmed with this compartmentalization of the game? Those of us that don't play fantasy, and I've said openly, I don't get the fantasy thing. I know tons of people do. But those of us that don't get the fantasy are like, oh, it's ruining the game. Like, I'm like grandpa. Like, it's ruining the game. It's compartmentalizing the game. How much is too much? How do you incorporate data into the spectating experience without kind of changing kind of the fluid, I don't know, kind of beauty of sport as it is?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it depends on what your users want. You know, if you have there are a lot of fans who just want to go to work Monday through Friday. You know,
oh, Monday through Friday. Wait a minute. Wait. 5-day work week?
Oh, hold on. Wait, hold on. Keith Strudler works Tuesdays, 3 hours in the middle of the day, and again, Thursdays from 3 to 6.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, so get your 15 hours of work
Thank
in
you.
And then drink
yeah.
some beers on the weekend right. and watch some football. Is right. that right?
Yes. That's America.
Okay. So some
Keith
people
works
want to
24
that.
Hours a week, 7 months a year.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think the big thing is, you know, the user that just wants to work in the middle of the week, during the week, and, you know, drink beers on the weekend, I don't know if they care that we're quantifying, hey, that's a great throw that happened to be dropped. But I think a lot of fans, I mean, football's always been this, you know, it's a complicated sport, 22 guys, you know, a lot of moving parts. And I think there's such a huge, massive fan base in football, obviously. And a big chunk always want to know a little bit more. Hey, what's cover two? How did they beat cover two? There's enough people, I think, that are interested in learning just a little bit more about the sport, interested in saying, you know, hey, this offensive tackle's good, you know, compared to this offensive tackle. I think one of the big things in football is just roster construction. We live in the whole Madden generation where, you know, people in their 30s grew up playing, you know, franchise mode, trying to build their team on Madden. So I think there's a big chunk of people just interested in that next level of football. So while some people may not be interested in that extra layer of detail, I think there's enough that are. And I think that's the beauty of football is there's a fantasy segment. There's people that want to learn more. There's people that just want to gamble. There's people that just want to show up and drink beers and watch the game and tailgate. So I just think that it depends on the segment, and there's enough people to go around for all the different various ways of looking at the game.
And we talk about Keith Strudler as an old school curmudgeon who rejects any sort of modern thinking.
That's right.
That could also describe
Can someone check on my horse outside?
that could also... Where's the hitching post? That could also describe a lot of football coaches. Very old school coaches still exist in the game of football. And I got to imagine there's some people out there that don't have time for these newfangled statistics. They can tell you whether an offensive tackle's good just by looking at him, right, whether he's got a thick lower half or not. Have you found any pushback? Have you found any pushback from some of the more old school coaches, or are they has their time in the game sort of passed by?
No, I think there's definitely some pushback, and look, they've been doing it a certain way for years. They're not necessarily they're not necessarily wrong in their thinking, but I think that the best teams and the best coaches they take in all the information. I mean, football is a game of information as it is. You know, whether it was in the 1980s, they were still saying, hey, it's third and six, chances are the defense is going to do this or this. Based off of that, I'm going to make my decision on what play to call. I mean, it's always been an analytical type of game, no matter how you define it. So I think the best coaches have found a way to, you know, open their eyes just a little bit, broaden their horizon, so to speak. But, you know, I still talk to offensive line coaches who say, you know, we were at the Senior Bowl last week and they have the weigh-in and they say, I like to rate this guy based off how he walks across the stage in his underwear, basically. Oh. And they rate them 1 through 5. And I'm like, hey, that's analytics. You're putting a number on it. That's what it's all about.
Yes.
It's at least quantifying it. But, look, there's always going to be a little bit of that pushback. And, you know, for us, because we're trying to grade how well these guys play, the big pushback is, well, you don't know what they're asked to do. You don't know what the assignment is. You don't know what the play call is. But, you know, when you watch enough football, I think for the most part, you know what these guys are trying to do on a given play. And every now and again, there's some gray area. So I'd say that the biggest pushback is that, like, how do you know what's going on in this complicated game? And I'd say it's very, you know, it's nuanced, it's complicated, but it's also right in front of your eyes once a play is, you know, occurs. So you can gather some important information on a given play. And like I said, the best coaches, front offices, staffs are taking the more information and able to make good use of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of football coaches do their analysis the same way you might see in like a Donald Trump owned beauty pageant. Walk across the stage in their underwear.
Quick 1 through 5.
Right. So, but you guys, this isn't just pure data collection. There's a lot of analysis that goes into what you do and the kind of stuff that you're able to give to teams and to fans. How much tinkering do you have to go with it goes into that analysis? I mean, you guys, people that use Pro Football Focus are very reliant on your ability to kind of create the right dynamic. I mean, you're giving people ratios. You know, we've been looking at some of this stuff through biometrics, like what does it mean to be fatigued? You can look at heart rate, you can look at sweat rate. What does it mean to be fatigued? You are taking data and giving it meaning and giving that to teams. How do you get to that place? Like what kind of mind, you know, think needs to go on, and how often do you tinker your formulas?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the crux of what we do is just the grading of production. And I think the biggest thing with that is, you know, we put out an overall grade and we put out, say, a receiving grade and a coverage grade and a pass rush grade. And, you know, for a fan, that might be enough. And they say, hey, here's a number that represents this player. I'd say at the team level, when we're giving them a massive database of information, it's important. The onus is more on them to kind of find what the meaning is, you know, for them and for their situation. So we might put a great grade on a player, but they can dig deeper and say, well, this grade came in, you know, 3 games. He had 3 massive games and, you know, 10 average games in a season, say. And it's on them to basically figure out where, you know, where these results come from and how that fits in to their structure. We can spoon feed the NFL and fans to a point, But I think the beauty of it, too, is that all teams are going to have take a slightly different angle on it. I think fans are going to, you know, even have their own thoughts on things. And so when we might, you know, give an overall grade and say, hey, a guy's an 88.2, you know, a fan might have the information to say, yeah, but he had only 4 good games and, you know, a couple bad games, or those good games came against bad competition. And you add whatever context you want to the situation. So I think that's kind of the beauty of what we do, is we can present the information and it can be interpreted slightly different ways depending on, you know, each situation.
Steve, just a note, your picture is on our live stream right now, so you might want to go check that out. It's very,
Steve knows what he looks like.
No, but it's a good picture. I think you'll be happy with the choice.
Which picture?
It looks like you're on a talk show.
You're in a suit. Like you got a gray suit. Lapel, that's very fashion forward.
Purple tie and a matching.
Oh, my wife dresses me extremely well. Yeah, I did a couple shows on NBC.
Twitter
NFL
picture.
Draft preview. Oh,
it's your Twitter.
Super Bowl
it's your
preview.
It's your Twitter picture. It looks great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Only pick the best for Twitter.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, I believe you're heading down to the Super Bowl. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'll be down in Houston running around Radio Row for a few days.
So what's your Super Bowl? Like, what's your Super Bowl time like? Tell me what you're going to be doing. By the way, I'm a Houston guy, so you probably have your Houston spots, but I'm happy to help you out if you're looking for a restaurant.
No, I'm wide open. I have no idea.
Keith Struthers is a vegetarian. Keep that in mind. You like salad.
No. There's an Italian place called Nino's, and they've got a sister place called Vincent's.
And try the veal.
I need a good steak down there.
The veal chop. Yeah, the veal chop's actually quite good.
How would you know?
My dad used to have it all the time.
It's an off the menu. Salad. I need a good salad.
It's an off the menu veal chop down there at Nino's.
Off the menu. Yeah. All the best are off the menu.
So Nino's is quite good. You can't go wrong with Mexican. If you want to go old school, go to Ninfa's. That's old school.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
jotting these down.
Yeah. No, you'll have a great. Where are you staying? Unless you keep that a secret.
Yeah, tell everyone.
I don't remember.
Steve.
I don't need people stalking me at my hotel or anything.
You're right.
So.
There's no one famous down there.
And in case anybody wants to call you, your cell phone number is?
All right, Steve.
555.
Steve, what are you doing down at the Super Bowl besides going to Nino's?
Yeah, so I'll be running around Radio
Benji's
Row talking a little Super Bowl preview. We have a nice little packet we'll be handing out down there that we've put together with all of our information. Adds a great extra layer of detail previewing the Patriots and Falcons, and talking NFL draft, because that's my passion and what I'm really employed to do here at PFF, preview the draft and give some perspective on the NFL draft prospects and you know, where they project at the next level using our 855 games of detailed data that we collected during the college football season.
Steve, we need your official Super Bowl prediction. I'm going to need to know Patriots or Falcons and the exact score and how that relates to the over-under, please.
I don't know the over-under, and I don't want to do the math on the spot, but I'm going to say Patriots win 31-24.
Ooh, that's going to be real close, the over-under.
Does that go over?
I don't know exactly what it is, but Vegas always knows.
I think that's under. I think we should see a decent number of points. I think Brady and that Patriots offense should be able to move the ball against the Falcons defense. Clearly the best offense the Patriots have faced all season, as well as that D has played. And the Falcons offense has just been so good all year with Matt Ryan running it and Kyle Shanahan pushing the right buttons, using a lot of players. So I expect to see a lot of points.
Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Check it out online, profootballfocus.com, our guest in the classroom. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
You got to watch the live stream.
If you're watching our live stream, you can see a comparison between Steve Palazzolo and Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down, actor Danny McBride. And Oliver, our technician, would like to know if they were separated at fantasy birth. So that's what you're missing out on if you're not on our live stream.
You got to watch the live. If you're not watching the live stream, you're missing half the fun. You're missing half the fun is what you're doing. Actually, you're missing three quarters of the fun, because just watching this is a pleasure. So we'll also say,
Danny McBride.
You can't put date on heart. You can't put date on soul.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Louisville responding to the NCAA's accusations relating to their mother-daughter prostitution recruiting scandal. The story won't go away, and we love it in the classroom. More ahead, Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Also hanging out. Don't forget, you can like us on Facebook, ESPN The Classroom. We're on Twitter at ESPN underscore Classroom. And archives are available in the podcast section of iTunes. Search for ESPN The Classroom. Okay. Is it safe to say that the Louisville mother-daughter prostitute recruiting scandal is our favorite story of all time?
It's right up there. You know, what I never thought I would use as a search term in Google is Louisville basketball prostitute. And yet I find myself doing that to get the most current news on this story.
Let's catch people up. If you're not like Keith and I and you've been living under a rock for these last couple of years, this is what we're talking about. From 2010 to 2014, during the tenure of Louisville men's basketball head coach Rick Pitino, director of basketball operations Andre McGee hired strippers and prostitutes as a way of gaining favor with high school recruits. This scandal broke open in 2015 when Katina Powell, who was the woman in charge of organizing this whole thing, bringing women of ill repute to the Louisville campus.
What did Putin refer to prostitutes as? Women of questionable morality, I believe.
Fair. She published a book called Breaking Cardinal Rules, Basketball and the Escort Queen, and that's when these allegations finally came to light,
right,
that Andre McGee was on Rick Pitino's staff, was using the services of Katina Powell to try and lure high school recruits to Louisville. You know, high-level athletes go on recruiting visits. They meet the players, the teams, they tour the facilities, and then at night, it's like the Wild West.
Well, they got to go. They want to see what nightlife is going to be like. They want to understand what it's going to be like to be a basketball player at the University of Louisville. Apparently, that's what it is.
So in October 2016, the NCAA put out its notice of allegations against Louisville, in which it pointed the finger at Pitino for not consistently checking the program for, quote, compliance issues, which again, in this case, means hiring strippers and prostitutes for often underaged basketball recruits.
Right. And so that was the particular. This wasn't like, oh, you can't take them out to dinner.
Right.
You can't, you know, you can't buy them clothing.
Right.
You can't fly them home to see their parents, you know, or to see a relative's funeral. This is more of the you can't hire prostitutes to come to the dorms and have something of a, you know, kind of a Studio 54 Caligula kind of kind of event.
So Louisville this week.
Did I get that right?
You did. Louisville this week essentially admitted this happened.
Sure.
The NCAA made 40 accusations, and Louisville looked at them and said 37 of these.
Right.
Yeah, all right, we agree.
Yes. I'm sure there's some nuance. They're like, look, they didn't have the feather boa. Like,
now what Louisville is pushing back on, there's a little bit of pushback.
Right.
And it almost solely surrounds this idea that Rick Pitino knew anything about this.
Yes.
They're very much pushing back on the fact that Pitino had any idea this was happening.
Well, you know basketball coaches, they tend to be very, at big-time universities like Louisville, they tend to be very hands-off.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't like to control anything. They're really, just get me, I'll show up on game days. Everything else, out of my control.
Yeah. Louisville's trying to get the violations.
How many guys, by the way, on a basketball team?
Well, you have 15 scholarships.
Right. Versus like a football team, 85 scholarships, right?
Football team,
things happen in a football program you don't know about. Coordinators become almost like head coaches of a unit.
Yes, I promise you this is true. Head football coaches don't know the names of every player on their team.
Right? Basketball, not the case. Basketball coaches know every recruit coming in. They know every player. They know where they live. They know what classes they're taking. Basketball is a star system, very small number of players, and their jobs and careers are based on making sure those small number of players make it to the court on time.
Andre McGee, the Louisville coach who is responsible for coordinating all this, he's gone. He's now, you can't touch him. He's radioactive.
I've heard hang out with Christopher Steele.
Yes. They are currently in a bunker somewhere. But the reason that Louisville's pushing back on these few points is they want to get this class of violation knocked down from major to mitigated. It essentially means they will face less severe penalties if they can convince the NCAA that it's not a major violation, that Rick Pitino truly didn't know anything about it.
So they want to
make it so that the penalties are more of a drop in the bucket than something more severe like a loss of scholarship or a postseason ban
They were having like a dance.
Because as you know, the only thing worse than the death penalty in the NCAA, it's not worse, but what's right up there is lack of institutional control. You cannot get hit with a lack of institutional control, and that's what Louisville is trying to avoid.
Now, doing a poetry recital.
Here is what Louisville has basically said. They said Rick Pitino knew nothing about this. That's the first.
Right.
The second thing they said is, yeah, all right, we did it.
This is the bigger one.
However, you should know that it didn't matter. Louisville specifically saying, quote, in their rebuttal.
Read it. Read it. Read it.
The university does not believe these dances or sexual activities greatly assisted its recruiting efforts. As noted elsewhere in this response, at least one prospect reported that this experience resulted in his disliking the university. It was a net negative, Keith Strudler.
So clearly, look, not only did having this situation in their dorm room, not only did it not convince a single virile young male to come to that university, it turned them off. They said, I thought this was a reputable. I thought Rick Pitino was a saint. I had no idea that this is the kind of den of sin I might be walking into. I'm pushing this off the list. I'm going up the road to West Virginia. I'm not coming here.
Louisville is claiming that Andre McGee was so nefarious in his actions that he purposefully intended to avoid detection. Purposefully. It was a master plan not to get caught by bringing mother-daughter prostitute teams on campus.
This stuff, look, if Rick Pitino had any knowledge of this, he would have shut it down immediately.
According to Rick Pitino's lawyer, in a 47-page letter, that's a long letter. It was a 42-page letter.
Is he resigning from the Sixers?
Yeah.
Inside joke there for those of you that follow the program.
He added that Andre McGee never once provided a hint of these illicit activities. Mm. Now, Andre McGee was what's known as a director of basketball operations, essentially the low man on the totem pole.
He's doing laundry.
He's the guy who handles the travel, coordinations, the meals, you know, the kind of things that you need to do in a program, but that don't necessarily involve basketball planning.
Former player.
Basketball staffs, by the way, range from 4 to really 8 or 9 people. So we're not talking about massive organizations here. The idea that one of them, especially one this low on the totem pole, would have the financial wherewithal to do this without somebody higher up the food chain knowing it.
It stretches the imagination.
And the ability to do it on campus with active athletes and future recruits, but make sure that the head coach would have no idea.
It seems like it might come out in a scrimmage sometime.
If you believe that's true, I've got some land to sell you.
And you'll also believe that Mexico's paying for the wall.
Matt and Mike is our guest on.
He's been on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was trying to go on why you just kept...
Oh, I didn't hear the click.
Well, they're professional. You don't have to hear the click.
I didn't hear the noise. Right, I apologize. Let's welcome our guest into the classroom, Dr. Mark Nagley from the University of South Carolina, a professor of sports management. And, Mark, before we welcome you into the program, this is the point in the show where Keith Strudler takes off his shirt.
Well, I just want to show you, if you're watching the live stream, I got my Gamecocks shirt on.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Feels good.
God.
Mark, we're talking about Louisville responding to the NCAA's allegations about their recent scandal of illicit activities involving recruits. How do you feel about their response that they made public this week?
Well, first I wanted to point one thing out, and I think you guys probably talked about this at some point, but you know, this is about the only scandal that could cause Rick Pitino's extortion, palimony, testimony regarding how long he could last in a encounter with a female that was read into the court record, that actually knocked that scandal to number two. Mm. So Pitino has a great track record going here when it comes to sex scandals at Louisville, which is fascinating. But I think I think Louisville is doing the only thing that they can do. I mean, it's obviously this stuff is true. I think they're just trying to save their hide from getting the big hammer, and I think they're also trying to save Rick Pitino's hide because of, if this was in any way associated with him, that he knew about it or had endorsed this in any way, shape, or form, obviously that would really, really taint his record. So, you know, I think they're going to do everything they can to try to get that off of his record and just say it was completely a rogue, you know, person within their institution.
How do you think the NCAA is going to deal with this? I mean, you study college sports quite extensively. How do you think the NCAA will respond to what most of us on the outside see as ridiculous claims?
Well, I think Pitino is going to have some sort of suspension. I think if you look at Jim Calhoun and Boeheim and some of these other coaches that have been, you know, have in the last 3 or 4 years that have gotten in trouble because of issues that occurred within their program that they didn't necessarily know about or they claimed they didn't know about. So I would think they're probably going to put some sort of probation on Louisville. They'll probably have Pitino maybe sit out 5 to 10 games, something like that. whether they'll let him choose when those games are going to be. Will they be this spring when the tournament heats up, or will they be next year? I don't know. But I think the NCAA has to do something to Patino and something to Louisville, you know, because the NCAA always wants to make sure they look like they're doing something when there's a scandal.
Louisville did self-impose a postseason ban last year when it became apparent they probably weren't going to make the postseason. So we'll, that remains to be seen whether that will have any effect on any future penalties.
No, no, Mark, I believe you've got some coaching history in you, correct?
Yeah, I coached at the University of San Francisco, both with the men's team and also with the women's team.
The Dons.
So, storied program, by the way.
Yes, they won some national championships back in the 50s.
I know this is against the rules, but this is what journalists do nowadays. We got a two-part question. All right.
How did you recruit?
So, first, did you ever use any of these kind of nefarious means to recruit players to the University of San Francisco? And secondly, what do you buy into Patino's claims that this in no way might entice a player to attend the University of Louisville?
We never engaged in anything of this magnitude.
Shocking. I was like, what are we going to do if he says yes? He's like, I'd like to tell you we did do this.
Yeah, well, here's the real story of college basketball recruiting. No, but I do think it's interesting because the head coach will always tell the assistant coach, and the assistant coaches will always tell the players who are hosting the recruit. You know, you do during the 72-hour visit, you're going to take them to dinner, you're going to show them the facilities, you're going to show them, you know, meet with the professor, what they're going to major in, and, you know, all that kind of daytime activities. And then the coaches are going to tell the hosting player, you know, make sure he has a good time. And they don't necessarily want to know what make sure he has a good time or she has a good time entails. But, you know, when the evening activities occur, the coaching staff is usually not there. And so you want the recruit to have a good evening that night and to wake up the next day saying, hey, well, I had a great experience. I really liked what I learned during the day. And I also had a lot of fun being involved in the nightlife at this campus or near this campus. So I think there is some plausible deniability among most head coaches and among most assistant coaches. But there's also that weird, you know, what exactly does that mean when you tell players and you give them some money because you're allowed to give money to the players who are hosting the recruit? You know, go out and show him a good time. Go out and have a good time with him so that he feels great about coming here. You know, that's an interesting situation where the coach may not necessarily want to know, but the coach wants to know that the recruit had a good time.
Again, underscores one of the big problems with the Louisville situation is they didn't go out to have a good time. All they had to do to make this a non-story was go out. Go to the club. The fact that they brought it, the fact they played a home game is the problem.
And in a dorm named after Rick Pitino's brother-in-law.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right.
This is they kept it all under the same roof.
Yeah, this should have been like Florida State football in the late 1970s. Right. Nothing but away.
I don't think that should surprise anyone who's a fan of college athletics that's how a recruiting visit works. I also don't think anyone out there who's got half a brain should think that Andre McGee's anything other than the guy designed to fall on the sword. Yeah. I mean, there's no way that Rick Pitino didn't know. Right. I can't fathom how that could be possible.
But, Mark, is there a way, and again, you study the NCAA quite extensively, and you help host a conference on NCAA rules and ethos and all that, is there a way to clean this up, or is this one of those things where they'll slap their hands and maybe put a little rule in place, but is this just kind of symptomatic of what it is in college sports?
I think this is very, not that this happens at every campus, certainly, I think this is like a scandal on steroids. But I think that if you look at particularly on the men's basketball recruiting side, I think sex is a big part of recruiting. I mean, shockingly enough, 17 and 18-year-old males. You know, whether the coaching staff actually arranges this with a mother-daughter prostitute team, I think is obviously taking it to an entirely new level. But this is not, I think, behavior that doesn't occur elsewhere. I think most campuses, that's a big part of recruiting in basketball and football and probably in some of the other sports as well, that, you know, when you come here as a 17, 18-year-old, you want to know, okay, at night, is there going to be ready access to females if I'm a guy? And I think, you know, that's an unfortunate statement to make, but I think that's a big part of what goes through a 17-year-old male's mind.
I've got an idea of how we might be able to clean up some of these recruiting issues. Pay the athletes. Make it so that they decide where they're going to go to ply their trade that has clear economic value based on a compensation package, like other people picking where they go to work, versus who shows them the best night out.
Well, I mean, I agree. Mark, do you think that athlete compensation would change this?
I think athlete compensation, I've long been in favor of that. I think it cleans up so much when you actually just put everything on the table, because then it becomes a business transaction. And instead of it being, well, did so-and-so give me a handshake and I got $500, or someone gave me a car, or someone gave my mother a job, or I got sex in the in the dorm room from a prostitute team. You know, I think if you just make it a business transaction, and then it's very simple to monitor. It's like, you know, this is what you're getting paid, and this is what you're expected to do on the basketball court or on the football field or wherever else. And it really cleans up a lot of the sordid, underhanded stuff that's occurring right now.
It's like, Mark, when it's like you're talking to us like 5-year-old children. We're like, we giggle when you say
that.
Well,
I bet the recruit whose mom got the job is like, oh, man.
So...
Can you imagine what some of those recruits that went on that recruiting visit and then the next weekend went to another recruiting visit may have said when they got to school B or school C?
I mean, it
would have been very interesting.
This is so boring.
Like, we're going to a movie? What is that code for?
Mark, my final question. No one here on the set has been willing to answer or even address my question today. On February 6th, James Brown's coming to campus.
Oh,
I need to know if I should be wearing a suit or a sports jacket and a blazer and jeans.
That's all the time we've got. We want to thank Dr. Mark Nagel from the University of South Carolina for joining us in the classroom this morning. Mark, you've been on many times. We love having you. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We got to take a break.
That
we've got
rude.
Grades of the week
that
after this on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Welcome back inside the classroom. Running out of time this morning, and again, because our grades of the week intro will take up just about the rest of the program, we don't have any time to waste. We got to get right into this week's grades of the week. Uh-oh.
This week, shoot it up. There.
Yep. We start in the middle.
It's about time.
Of the week.
It's a little childish and stupid, but then so is college.
Almost done, folks.
Just hang on.
ABC stuff that everybody else in the world does.
Won't be long now.
You're in either an A or an F. You're not a D or a C. Or a B. You're
it's
either
be
an A
worth
or an
it.
F.
Explosion's coming.
No, there's no explosion on this one. Explosion's on the other one. It's a fade.
Should have had an explosion.
All right, redo that next time for next week with an explosion.
Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski is not happy. He's also not really with his team right now, as he's on the mend after back surgery. But he did hold a meeting with his guys this week after their loss to NC State, where he realized that his boys not worthy of some of the comforts that they were afforded as men's basketball players at Duke. He kicked them out of their locker room.
Donovan strategy. And
said they are now banned.
You don't deserve the locker room.
And they are now banned from wearing any Duke-branded clothing. Until they straighten up and fly right, Keistra. But grade this disciplinary tactic.
I give it a D because you know what I'm going to stop doing when I get banned from that locker room? I'm going to stop caring. So I am going to you take that away from me. You want me not in the locker room? You're going to see me without a shower and deodorant for about a week. You want me to represent the Duke program? I'll represent the Duke program. And if someone's like, where are your clean clothes? I'll be like, Coach won't let us have them. This is a passive aggressive means of fighting a war. And you can always, there is always a response to passive aggression. Like, you can get more passively aggressive. Like, it's not a good way to fight. You can't tell basketball players, look, guys, you generate millions of dollars of for the university, and you don't get paid. So what I'm going to do is punish you more. You don't deserve the nothing you get.
This week on Jeopardy, basketball podcaster Lauren Lee Chen became a two-time champion. Both of his wins were runaways, which meant that in Final Jeopardy, he could wager whatever the heck he wanted and still win the game. So basketball podcaster Lauren Lee Chen decided to use that opportunity to troll the Golden State Warriors. In his first win, his Final Jeopardy wager was $301. What does that mean? 3-0-1. 3-1. The lead that the Warriors blew in last year's NBA Finals. In the second game, his Final Jeopardy wager, $739. 7-3-9, 73-9, the Warriors' regular season record last year when they were thought to be invincible and then lost in the NBA Finals. Key Strother, that is a stellar troll job. Grade Lauren Lee Chen's Final Jeopardy wagers.
Oh, boy, I'm going to give it a D as well. I'll tell you why. So long to press credentials to the Cavs games. she's going to be sitting back.
Oh, Lauren Lee Chen is a guy.
Oh, okay. All right, so, pardon me. Lauren is going to be sitting back where, like, mainstream news is going to be sitting at the Trump press conferences, like in the back behind the partition. So, the podcasters, they have to be careful. They're one step ahead of the bloggers, right? So you got to be careful. He's going to lose some of his press access. Secondly, I like people on Jeopardy in the spirit of Cliff Clavin on Cheers, who blew it all in final. I like people that go big. They go big even when they don't have to. Bet it all. Give the opponent a chance. That's the way I say it in Final Jeopardy. Give the opponent a chance. So you say, look, you don't have to bet anything. You got this thing won. They can't beat you. Give them a shot. Let them try to come in for the victory. Be bold.
That's why you would do horrible on the show Hunted. It's that cavalier attitude that's why you can't spend 28 days on the lamb.
Because
you're going to be like, you know what? I'm going to use the ATM at the bus station.
No, I would
bring it on.
I would. You know what would happen? I would get a call from like a major from like ESPN. They'd be like, Keith, we'd like you to come on Outside the Lines and be our expert on this. And you'd be like, don't do it. We've only got four more days. And I'd be like, yeah, but come on, they're not going to catch us. This is Outside the Lines. This is
nobody watches that show.
This is NBC Sports. I've got to do it. I'll meet famous people. And you'd be like, please don't do it. And I would do it. I would literally do it. They'd be like, live from his house in Beacon, New York. Dr. Keith Strother. Like, I would get caught during the interview.
You're not famous. No one is calling you for your opinion.
Well, I have a famous story about my PBS piece. Someone called me from a...
Unfortunately, we're out of time in the classroom this week.
Said she saw me on PBS is a true story.
We've got no time left in the program this morning. We do want to thank our guest, Steve Palazzola from Pro Football Focus, and Dr. Mark Nagel from the University of South Carolina for calling in and joining us. And we thank you for hanging out, whether on our live stream or whether over the air here in the Hudson Valley, or whether you're planning on listening to this program long after it's been live via the podcast section
That's
of
right.
iTunes, where you can find it by searching for ESPN The Classroom. Throw us a like on Facebook. We're on Twitter at ESPN_Classroom. Matt and Mike and all the interns for the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, thanks for your hard work.
Just stop.
You know, you showed up.
Wrap it up.
That's good for something. Dr. Keith Strudler is my broadcast partner. I'm Jeff Brault. We'll see you next week. Another edition of The Classroom with you. Same time, same channel. Class is dismissed.